1,000 fewer than last week. Massachusetts, New Jersey, Kentucky, New York, and Connecticut had the biggest jumps in jobless claims. Biggest drops, California, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Wisconsin, and Oregon.
Pat Piper with the numbers from Washington on Wall Street. The Dow is up 141 points. I'm John Trout.
I get older, losing my head, many years from now. Will you still be sending me a valentine, birthday greetings, bottle of wine? If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me, will you still feed me when I'm 64.
We're back live and in color from the studios in downtown Northfield, Minnesota on this, the 12th day of July in the year's 2018. And I was just thinking, you must have had a 25th class reunion at your high school about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go?
No.
Really?
No. Yeah, I didn't go. I went to...
Did you want to go back and say, look at me now?
Absolutely. I didn't even know it was happening until I saw pictures on Facebook.
They ostracized you?
I don't know what happened. But I was like, somebody's like, oh, I saw blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, there was a class reunion.
Oh, that's too bad.
So, but I went to my fifth and I went to the 10th. The fifth was great. The 10th, there just weren't very many people. I think a lot of the people I knew well have kind of scattered to the winds. I haven't really stayed in
Omaha. How big was your high school class?
We were 275.
Oh, a nice intimate number.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. By the way, our guest this morning on KYMN is Sherry Setchell. And she, you want to introduce yourself again on all the things that you'd said at the beginning,
the beginning
of the 9 o'clock hour so people know who I'm speaking to?
Yes. My name is Sherry Setchell, and I am a director, choreographer, dance instructor, and body worker and movement therapist, and mom. I always try to include that because I think people forget that that's a job in itself always. I have one kiddo who is 13 and a half, so, and she is definitely a full-time job.
Did you say you have adopted children, too?
No, I don't have any. I have adopted as in there's a lot of kids I've taught. taught a lot of kids that I'm close to.
So there you're out. There you are in the hometown of one of the most wealthy men in the world. And he lives in a relatively not the nicest neighborhood, but second nicest.
Yeah.
And you have to go. You want to go to college. And how did you end up with McAllister from Lincoln, Nebraska?
Omaha. Right on.
Omaha.
My mom was very, very, very clear that I was going to college. No one in our family had gone to college except for her. She went, my mom, Helen, who is just an amazing, amazing dynamo of a woman. Like, I just cannot say enough positive things about my mom. But she was very clear that, like, she was going to get her degree when she was an older, she was a non-traditional student. She got her business degree. And then later on, when I was in high school, she decided to get her nursing degree. And so it was funny because she and I were in school at the same time for a year. And so she was very insistent that I choose to go to school, that I was going to go to college, even though I was not necessarily interested in academia and that sort of thing. But she was pretty clear that that was going to be part of my path, no matter what. And I was worried, as many students are today, about student loans and that sort of thing and managing that. But fortunately, as I said, we were in school for a year at the same time. So that was very helpful. But the way I ended up at McAllister was that my grandparents had lived in Minnesota for a while, and I kind of had always just been in love with it up here. It's so green compared to Omaha, and all of Nebraska is just kind of that golden color, I think is what I would refer to it as. And coming up here, I just remember how beautiful everything was. I loved I just liked the culture up here. It's a much more progressive environment than where I grew up. And so I always felt very comfortable, and I loved it up here, loved it up here. And so I was kind of looking at schools up in Minnesota. And at the time, I was dating a young man who I had met through a friend from theater camp, oddly enough. And he was looking at going to the Minnesota College of Art and Design. And even though we weren't serious, I was like, oh, you know, I'd like to go to someplace in St. Paul or Minneapolis or wherever you're going to be near. And so I started looking at schools and went to a college fair and found McAllister while I was there. And they had this beautiful, their book was just gorgeous. You know, it's McAllister in the Fall is just one of the most stunning campuses. It's absolutely gorgeous. And so I remember seeing those pictures and looking at the book and kind of doing a little bit of reading about it. There was no internet at the time, so I couldn't stalk them in that way and really figure out what the college culture was like. And really knowing absolutely nothing about them except what I had in this book, I was like, that's it. That's where I want to go. So I followed my gut. I applied early admission, and I ended up at McAllister.
Well, not anybody can get into McAllister, and similar to Carleton and mm-hmm. perhaps St. Olaf.
Mm-hmm.
Were you confident that you would be able to get accepted?
No, I did not think I was going to get accepted into McAllister.
What do you think was the thing that got you accepted?
Applying early admission, I think, helped a lot. I also think I kind of fit their demographic of what they were sort of looking for. You know, I came from a family that didn't have a long line of, educated people in it. My mom was the first to go to college out of our whole entire family. I was lower income and a female, so I think I just fit I honestly think I just fit a demographic.
Mm-hmm.
My academics, as I said, were really good. I had a lot of involvement, extracurricular involvement. I was involved in theater and swing choir, as I had said. I held down a job all through high school, also. So I worked at a dinner theater and I worked at a comedy club. And that's actually when you were just talking about, well, who are your friends? And I'm like, actually, the crazy people I worked with were my social group. My friend Jerry, whom I mentioned before, worked with me there, and it was just such a great group of people. So who needs best friends at school? I had a really wonderful group of people I got to hang out with every weekend at work.
Well, let's back up here now.
Yeah.
You worked at a comedy club?
I did.
Well, tell me what you did at the comedy club.
I was a hostess at the comedy club.
Okay.
And eventually I got to intro the intro.
Intro the intro?
Yes. Jeff McGill was the guy who kind of emceed everything. So I got to introduce the MC eventually. I got to go up there and introduce Jeff McGill every night. But yeah, I was a hostess. It was called Noodles, which is because it was owned by the same people who owned Spaghetti Works, which is downtown in the Old Market area. And that's kind of where I hung out a lot.
In Omaha.
In Omaha, yeah. And Noodles Comedy Club and Harrigan's Restaurant were attached to each other downstairs in the basement of the old firehouse. Interesting fact is that that basement was still cobblestoned, even when we were there. I hope it still is today, but it was still cobblestoned because it was the basement of the fire department. And in the winter, that is where they stored the alligators from the Henry Dorley Zoo. They lived in the basement at the firehouse. And so I worked at a comedy club in the basement of the firehouse where they stored the alligators.
Is it true that the comics that you met, there a lot of comics are underpaid, and some of them deserve to be underpaid, but many of them don't. Did you find that what is a common belief that most comedians have a pretty dark side?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Tell me about that.
No, I met a lot of really amazing people doing that job. Not just the people I worked with, because I think that's again where I found my crew were the people I worked with, but a lot of the comedians were just like really dark, sharp senses of humor. I'm trying to think of anybody specifically. There was a group of guys, there were two guys, they were called Those Generics, who were an improv comedy team. And so they came and they had like their shtick where they had their specific sets of improv that they would do, and they'd get audience feedback and create sketches from that. But I believe the man's name was Michael Gonzalez, and he was just like, he was so funny, but very like absurdist and dark with his humor. There was another guy that I kind of knew really well. I can't remember his name anymore. But there was also a comic magician named Mike Strange, who would come in pretty regularly. And he didn't always headline, but he would often open and like just again, really, I would say less dark and more just absurd. You know, I think a lot of stand up comes in and there's a good structure to it and a lot of logic to it. But I think that their actual senses of humor skew to more that absurdist kind of dark side where things are very random.
Well, this sounds like you were in high high school, and a lot of comedy is pretty vulgar.
Yes, absolutely.
And you're a high school student?
Yeah, but I never shied away from that sort of thing at all.
Yeah, but what about the people that ran the show? Did they say, sorry, kid, but you're just a kid?
No, and, nope. In fact,
how did you get the job?
They recruited me from upstairs. Because I worked at the dinner theater. I worked at the dinner theater my sophomore year of high school. They were looking for a hostess downstairs, and I kind of knew the people down there anyway. It's odd that most of the jobs I've had, I've just kind of fallen into. I'd say 80% of them I have not interviewed for, and I've just kind of fallen into them. But they liked me. They knew I worked hard, and so they asked me to come downstairs. And when I was in high school, I passed for a lot older, so I think most people didn't know that I was, 16, 17 years old. At the time.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Was it good pay?
No, of course not. Well, no, I think at the dinner theater I was making $3.80 an hour, and I was super excited to move up to like $4.25 an hour down at the comedy club. I think by the time I finally graduated, I was making $5 an hour there, and I was making $5 an hour at Spaghetti Works cashiering. I cashiered that whole summer before I went to college to earn money.
Did you ultimately get to meet and know somebody that later on became highly successful?
One of the people that I did meet when I was there was Mary Jo Peel. I don't know if you're familiar with Mary Jo Peel, but she is one of the head writers on Mystery Science Theater 2000. And so she is somebody that is near and dear to my heart still, and I remember meeting her. And I'm trying to think if there was anybody else. There was Poppy Champlin, who was somebody who kind of became a little bit more well-known. There was one other person too. I know when I see like those old like Evening at the Improv episodes, which they ran on Comedy Central for a while, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that guy. So it was pretty small potatoes in some ways, but we did have a few like really big people. As I said, Mary Jo Peel eventually went on to do MST. And
did they make you laugh?
Oh my gosh, yes. I laugh very easily though, Wayne. I am not a quiet girl when it comes to laughter. My students always know when I'm in the house because they can hear me laughing. So.
Now, when you came up to McAllister, was it mandatory you live on campus the first year?
First 2 years. So freshman and sophomore year, they asked that you live on campus. And so, I lived in Dupre both years I was on campus.
Now, did they have similar to St. Olaf and Carleton? Where they separate floors and then ultimately then it's co-ed all the way in
no,
the dorms?
No, actually one of the reasons I chose McAllister was because it was co-ed. The dorm floors were co-ed. That was actually one of the big reasons I didn't go to St. Olaf was because at the time they weren't co-ed floors, and it was a door open, one foot on the floor policy kind of thing. And
yeah.
So I was like, I don't know that I want to be in that kind of environment. So
did you look at St. Olaf?
I did, yeah. That was No, I did not look at Carleton. I did look at St. Olaf after I took my ACT. It was one of the places that sent me information. And so I looked into it a little bit, but part of the problem was I always associate it with Rose from the Golden Girls because she talks about how she's from St. Olaf. And I was like, it's a school? Like, my mind was blown, as many people I'm sure my age is. were blown away by, like, oh, there's a school. It's not just like a tiny town in Minnesota. It's a real school.
10:15 on 1080 Radio, KYMN. Okay, so now you get to St. Paul, and you follow a guy that you enjoyed, liked, or mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. and you get into McAllister. Mm-hmm. Was it mandatory that you read the Reader's Digest?
No, but I grew up reading Reader's Digest. I love Reader's Digest. It's awesome.
You want to tell people why that's funny?
Because of the DeWitt Wallace Foundation, which is Reader's Digest legacy money, is what McAllister is. Their whole endowment, I think, is from that.
Yeah.
From that money, which is so hilarious in many ways.
Do you play a music instrument?
I play ukulele poorly.
Okay.
Yes.
But
joyfully.
Perform?
Yeah, actually, I have performed with a group called the Pogolales. And we are three people who cover an Irish band called the Pogues. They're a punk rock. They're an Irish punk rock band. And so we cover their songs with ukuleles and loud voices. And we perform. We've performed three times now at Vaudevesque over at the Arts Guild Theater. And I love it. We have fans.
Wow. Did you ever get to know Tiny Tim?
I know who Tiny Tim is, absolutely, yes.
Well, I associate him with ukulele.
Yes.
So, did you have a major?
I was a classics and English double major. My plan going into school, of course, was studying theater. And the theater program at McAllister is very small, and I think it still is fairly small. And so I was unable to get into classes my first semester. And I auditioned for shows there. I was unable to get into shows there my first semester. And so I think that was really discouraging to me in a lot of ways. And my plan on top of studying theater was to study English and become a high school English teacher. So that was my primary goal at the time. And so I kind of started on that track. And then second semester of my freshman year, I took a class called Classical Mythology, which was taught by Jerry Reedy, and fell in love with it. I fell in love with him. He was such a great, joyful human. And so I started falling in love with classics. My next year, I took a class called Women in Classical Antiquity from Francesca Santoro-Loire, and that changed my whole life. And so I decided I was going to study classics and English and get my education degree all at the same time. And eventually decided to not do the education track because it was going to be another year of school. And so I ended up with just a classics and English double major.
Well, wouldn't it be logical that if you're studying classics, that you'll ultimately be a teacher of classics?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. I think the goal is usually to become a classics professor. And several of the people I graduated with, that's what they're doing. I have a friend she's in Canada now, and she's a classics professor. I have one of my other friends, he teaches Latin in the New York public school system. I think it's public school. No, it's probably not public if they're teaching Latin. He teaches Latin out in New York.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I know that's what philosophers, people that yes. major in philosophy.
Yes.
And yeah. we have many interesting philosophers that live here in North. Field.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is a boxing coach.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know Gordon
Marino. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know him?
Yeah, I'm familiar with him.
Isn't he interesting?
Yeah, absolutely.
He gave me a book on exaltation. I don't know how to. You know what I mean? Can you say it?
Existentialism?
Yeah. Why can't I say that word?
It's a tough word. It's a tough concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I start reading and I'm going,
it's like,
wait.
Whoa, you just want to like go walk into the river after
yeah.
that. But no, I actually use my classics major pretty much every day of my life. So I really encourage people to study classics and to learn about them and to learn how they've shaped our current culture. And every single day I use my critical thinking skills. I use that knowledge that I learned specifically. But Francesca, whom I mentioned earlier, she really was a stickler about us knowing our stuff and knowing how to shape it and really making sure we understood what we were spewing back to her every time.
Is it more or less an opportunity to have a teacher or yourself say, well, like so-and-so said, and then make a comparison to a classic Greek mythology
yeah,
or
absolutely.
Whatever?
And yeah, absolutely.
And then expect and anticipate that the person knows who you're referring to.
Yes, like Aristophanes says. Yes, yeah. I think there is that kind of expectation, but it is. It's kind of what has shaped our culture from all places. And I love that classics has become much more inclusive as to what people study. It's not just Greek and Roman history and mythology. It's including a lot more cultures now, which I think is great.
Now, what did you do your junior year at McAllister?
We moved off campus.
We,
yes, meaning my husband.
Oh.
My once and future yeah. husband. No, he's my partner in crime, whom I met actually the very first month of college. We started dating second month of college.
Where was he from?
He's from Medina. So he's from like the western suburbs area.
Yep.
He grew up in the Bay Area also, though. He's from Fremont, California originally, and his family moved to Nevada, and then they moved out to Medina, and they've been there for a really long time. His parents own a beautiful home on the lake, Holy Name Lake out there. And so he's kind of from there. He's like the white suburban punk kid.
Did you know all that before you started hooking up?
What did I know about him? I don't know. He was just so adorable. He's still adorable, but he was just so adorable. And he was so The guys I met in college were very different from the farm kids that I knew in, you know, in Omaha, or, you know, the punk kids that I knew in Omaha. They were just really different, and they weren't intimidated anymore. So I met a lot of guys at the beginning of college, and then I met Michael, and he was just so very different. Speaking of absurd senses of humor, and just very quirky, and he was very quiet when we were in college. He was just an amazing person.
So what neighborhood did you move into?
We moved over onto St. Clair Avenue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so he and I kind of cohabitated in our dorm rooms together anyway, and so we were eventually...
What would the people up on the hill think
of
that?
Yeah, it would not have been a good situation. But my roommate moved out second semester of freshman year, and so we kind of pushed our beds together, and like we studied together and just sort of lived together from that moment on. But yeah, we moved into this beautiful, sweet little bungalow over on St. Clair Avenue, and with friends. And we lived with my friend Pat, who is still near and dear to my heart, 100%, and another friend that I had worked with at the time. And then she eventually left, and we brought in our friend Amanda, and that's who we lived with.
Did you hang with Katie's or Tommy's?
No. No, they were kind of far away too. And like St. Kate's, there were a lot of really great young women who came over to McAllister from St. Kate's to take classes because we're part of that consortium. But I didn't really get to know any of them that well. I took ballet with one of them, and she was really awesome. But the Tommies, they were kind of down at the other end. They were all a little too athletically inclined for most of the people at McAllister.
Yeah. Okay. Was Irv Cross there when you were there?
I don't know. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I know we had rugby, really good rugby teams, but that's about it.
Yeah. It's 24 minutes after 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair, our first break this hour, and we will get back to our guest here on KIM, Sherry Setchell, right after these messages from your radio station.
I hear the Subway Fritos Chicken Enchilada Melt is back. No, really, I literally heard it. Loaded with savory rotisserie-style chicken that's covered in enchilada sauce. Layer that with melty Monterey cheddar cheese, add some spicy chipotle southwest sauce, and finally, topped with loud, crunchy Fritos. Fair warning, though, this one's a real decibel breaker. Requesting earplugs encouraged, but not required. Fritos Chicken Enchilada Melt. Make it spicy. Make it crunchy. Make it loud. Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit NorthfieldArtsGuild.org or call 507-645-8877.
Oh my God, Becky, look at her butt. It is so big.
Should I turn this down? this isn't a radio edit.
Oh, it isn't? I don't think there's anything terribly inappropriate in it.
I only talk to her.
I don't know, yeah.
She looks like a total prostitute, okay? I mean, her butt is just so big. I can't believe it's just
you
so
know the name of it?
Yeah.
What's the name?
It's I Like Butts. Big Butts.
Baby's
Got Back. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, that's not the name of Big Butts,
and I cannot lie. Yeah.
You know who does it? In your
face, you I can't think of it. Wait, Sir Mix-a-Lot? Is it Sir Mix-a-Lot? All right, there we go. Baby's Got Back by Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Oh, I can just see your class reunion, at the 50th, you know.
Everybody jumping around to Baby's Got Back.
26 minutes after 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio, we've got a guest here by the name of Sherry Setchell, and she's a very busy young woman, and we're going to get into your family and how you ended up in Northfield. But right now, did you have a job when you were going to McAllister to help pay for that apartment that you had on St. Clair?
I worked in the library my first year, and then sophomore through junior year, I actually worked in the box office at the theater department.
Okay.
So I had work study that I did, and then of course I worked my butt off every summer to earn money. So.
And like where?
I worked at the what was known as the World Trade Center downtown St. Paul, okay. Which is now I think the Wells Fargo Center. I worked there because there used to be retail there. I worked at Ritz Camera there. I worked at, there was a place called the Map Store there. So I worked there. I worked at the Mall of America at the Map Store. I worked at, what is it, Eddie Bauer? No, I worked Eddie Bauer after, after college. I worked at Eddie Bauer at the mall. I did coding for a summer, which is basically what you look at a bunch of legal documents and you type in relevant information from the legal document into a database. That was a great job because I could just sit and listen to music the whole time while I was doing it. And so I loved it. We worked with great people. I worked with my husband that summer. It was a blast. What else did I do? I'm trying to think. There's a blank in there. Oh, after my first year of college, I was in Omaha for part of the time. I lived with my dad, and I did telemarketing, which was really great. Oh, my gosh. I'm glad I never have to do that again. And I baked at Perkins, and that was the summer that it flooded. And so it was really, really hot and sticky in the bakery at Perkins every single night. It was crazy.
And you always fell into those jobs.
Those jobs I interviewed, all those jobs I interviewed for.
Oh,
all of
okay.
those jobs I interviewed for. The job at the dinner theater and the comedy club definitely did not interview for those jobs.
Well, let's get you out of college.
Yes.
And did you and your husband get married while you were in school or
no.
after?
No, we after we graduated, we stayed in St. Paul for a little while longer. I actually worked at a really great place called the Merrill Corporation in St. Paul, so I had a good job there. But we were kind of looking to do something else with our lives, get out of the Midwest for a while. And he was looking to go to UCLA to get his classics master's, actually, which swiftly changed after we got out there. But we moved out to LA and we got married within 6 months of moving to Los Angeles, which in hindsight was so stupid because moving to a new place is overwhelming and moving to a city of 14 million people is crazy pants. But we did it. So yeah, we got married while within 6 months of moving to Los Angeles.
So comparing Omaha to St. Paul
mm-hmm.
to Los Angeles.
yes.
St. Paul and Omaha about the same size.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
did you like St. Paul?
I love St. Paul. I absolutely love St. Paul.
Is it kind of like a secret from Minneapolitans?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, people say it's the biggest little town in the Midwest, and it's true. There's something so sweet about St. Paul, and yet, again, like it's gotten so much more diverse and interesting, and the way everything's kind of melted together there. And I love the architecture in St. Paul. Like I love Summit Avenue, and I love downtown.
Yeah.
And just so many beautiful buildings.
You know the Landmark Building?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh. That is amazing. Old post office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had the privilege of performing in the atrium there.
Oh, wow.
A thing called Feast of the Realm.
Love it.
And I was a king that was celebrating his 50th birthday. And it was huge. It was the budget was fantastic.
Nice.
I mean, everything was just first class, you know, your costumes and all that.
Yeah.
But you went out to L.A. Last place I would want to go, I don't like California.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I love San Diego.
Yeah, yeah.
But where did you live in Los Angeles?
We actually met a friend out there who had already been living there for about a year and a half, and he found us a place in Laurel Canyon. So we lived at the base of Laurel Canyon and Hollywood Boulevard, like right on that intersection. And so we got, I don't know, I just feel like our whole time in LA was sort of this magical bubble of time, and that again, like we just got so lucky with all of our timing out there, with the way we found our jobs, with the way eventually when we were kind of done being there, our apartment building got bought and we got paid to move. So I mean,
nice.
It was just this very weird, it was very synchronous the way everything worked out. And we were mostly in LA because you know, my husband was looking to go to college at UCLA. He eventually decided to get his master's in library science.
Library science?
Mm-hmm, yes. So a library and information science. And so for most of the time we were out there, he was in school.
Did he get his master's?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Doctorate?
Nope. There are very few PhDs in library science, to my knowledge.
guess what?
What?
My godfather, mm-hmm. my uncle, mm-hmm. Father Clyde Eddy, mm-hmm. Had his doctorate degree in library science and started the Shaughnessy Library on St. Thomas, the university's campus there.
Wow.
And I helped his little kid, I was freshman in high school, to mm-hmm. carry the books from the old library to the new one.
Nice.
And I've told that story before, mm-hmm. but it's always a connection to somebody somehow. So what type of a job is a person with a master's in library science, is it working at places of education?
Yes,
or government historical stuff?
A lot of times, in the 90s, I think it was a little bit different because the corporations were hiring a lot of librarians in the 90s to do research. Actually, the company that I worked at, we had three librarians who were responsible for doing research on the companies that we were looking to acquire. And I think that kind of is something that died down a little bit with the advent of the internet and Google. And so I think most librarians are working more in academia. My husband works at Dakota County Technical College and is their head librarian.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a nice commute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does he ever invite you to be a guest lecturer?
No. He does bibliographic instruction classes, and that's kind of his main classroom contact there, is just going in and teaching people how to use the resources of the library. So
is a Dewey Decimal System a thing of the past?
I think certain libraries use it. They use the Library of Congress system. So I think most upper level, quote unquote, academic libraries use the Library of Congress, but I think smaller libraries, I think our library still uses the Dewey Decimal System.
Do you think that everything you Google is true?
Absolutely not. In fact, I Google my Google.
Yeah,
Google my Google.
What does that mean?
It's just I always dig a little bit deeper. I never take, that's what I learned in classics. Don't take the thing on top as the first thing and the truth. There's always something else going on. There's always some spin. So keep digging. So I always try to do a lot more research, or I call Michael and I'm like, hey, could you look at this for me? And so he'll check it out and he always can find that what's true about it.
Now, were you a tech savvy person immediately when the internet came about, being and all that? Did you get involved right away?
No, I was the person who did not know how to type when I got to college. So I ended up having to teach myself to type. But for the first year of college, Michael typed my papers, Amanda typed my papers, Pat typed my papers.
You type
because
now?
Because I do type now. I love typing. I'm actually a really good typist.
Well, you said that you listened to music while you were doing that.
Yes,
stuff.
Yeah.
Now, do you type the way they teach you, or do you have your own?
I type the way that I learned how to do the actual touch typing. And so, I was behind the ball a little bit in that respect. And we moved out to LA, and that's kind of when, the whole internet boom began at around that same time. And the company I was with started buying up more education technology companies. And one of my first big assignments when I was there was, they're like, hey, learn how to use this program. And so I had to learn how to use this program because they were going to buy a company and they needed to funnel that information into this program. So I sat down with, FileMaker Pro for Dummies, and I figured out how to use it over the weekend. And I've always kind of prided myself in being able to at least have the ability to discover enough information to be dangerous with whatever I'm using.
And I'm the type of guy that I don't want to try it because I don't want to lose.
Right.
You know, if you don't try, you can't lose.
Well, and that's the great thing about technology, I think, is that it encourages that, just do a little bit and you'll figure it out. And just do. I know I always had that conversation with my mom, who still thinks of computers as punch cards. It's like, no, mom, you can't break it in that way. She's like, well, I used to, and I know it's like, you can't break it that way anymore though. It's not that fragile. It's a lot more robust.
I don't use my smartphone as to the value that it has, but for some reason I was looking up, I went to the Indy 500 race in Indianapolis for 30 years or more in a row. Mm-hmm. And I remembered an accident, and I was trying to recall what year it was. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, I'll just ask Google, and I mentioned a name and three different years. And what I found out is that when you are just getting into reading what they're telling you, something pops up.
Oh, yeah. It drives me nuts.
And you go, what the heck? What is that?
I know. That drives me nuts.
And you can't get rid of it sometimes.
I know. Yeah. I hate it. I hate it.
I didn't sign up for that.
I know. It drives me nuts.
Do you ever use a Kindle?
I do, yes.
To read books?
Not to read books. I prefer still having my hard copy. I believe learning is three-dimensional, and we should have a three-dimensional item in front of us. I actually use it primarily for, I crochet, so I use it to put my crochet patterns on, and I use it for the guitar tabs to play my ukulele.
Well, I'll tell you something about Kindle that is really nice, is that if there's a word in there, and you don't know that word, or you wonder if it's being interpreted the way you think it is,
mm-hmm.
you just put your finger on that word, and it pops up with the definition.
That's cool.
It really is. Well, guess what? Mm-hmm. If you read Kindle enough,
mm-hmm.
when you're reading the newspaper, you go, huh? And you touch the newspaper, and you go, wait a minute, that isn't going to work. Well, what does work is some information I want to pass along here. We'll be back with our guest here on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Get her to Northfield in just a moment.
Where the city meets the farms, the Great Rice County Fair.
We'll see you there.
The Great Rice County Fair and Faribault will soon be here, July 17th through the 22nd. Get your hands on summer's best deal, Passport to Fun. Your ticket to unlimited rides on Gold Star Amusements for the entire fair for $45. Advance sale at Faribault Hy-Vee, Fairway Foods in Faribault, and the Rice County Fair Office. Contact the Fair Office for prices effective July 17th.
Where the city meets the farms, the Great Rice County Fair. We'll see you there.
Your home, auto, and life are important to you. That's why the Northfield Insurance Agency works hard to provide you with the right protection. Kevin and Stan offer the products you need with the premier service you deserve. They carry business, auto, farm, homeowners, commercial, and bonds. Northfield Insurance is your independent agent, and they're connected with many insurance companies providing you with the lowest possible rates. That's the Northfield Insurance Agency.
When you need cement or masonry work done, think of DNS Cement in Northfield. DNS Cement provides superior concrete and masonry work. They pour walls for both home and business. Poured walls provide more strength and are more energy efficient. DNS also does concrete driveways, swimming pool decks, and has decorative concrete too. They'd be happy to provide you with an estimate and go over all of your plans. If you're building, contact DNS Cement in Northfield at 507-663-1294.
Well, that's interesting. Last night I happened to go out to the Red Barn and was amazed at how many people were there, and I didn't know hardly any of them, but I did see Dick Simon and his lovely wife of Roxy, and we sat and chatted for a while in the farm section. Have you ever been out to the Red Barn? Do you know what I'm talking
Absolutely.
About?
Absolutely. We don't go out there anymore because there are too many people.
I was shocked.
And I don't know any of them. That's funny. When you said that, I was like, yeah, last time we were out there, the first time we went, we knew everybody there. And then, yeah, I think we went out there once last summer, and I was baffled. I'm like, I don't know anyone here.
Yeah. And that's the way it's becoming for me. I've been here almost 50 years.
Yeah.
And I walk into restaurants around town.
Yep.
And I go, who are these people?
Who are these people?
You know, and that's what we're going to find out about you in regards to how you got here. But first of all, the number one song in all of 1992 on the Billboard pop chart.
I do not know this song.
You'll be mine forever, baby. You just say.
We belong together.
Yeah, I actually do not know this song. I don't think I've ever heard this song.
You know, when I punched the button there, I said, I'll bet you she doesn't know this group, and if she does, probably not a fan.
Is this voice to men or something
yes,
like that?
Yes, it is. Boys to Men, End of the Road.
Oh, okay, right on. Yeah.
20 minutes before, it's 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN. Yes, indeed, our guest this morning is Sherry Setchell. And Sherry, you went up to Los Angeles, they paid you to move, and your husband becomes a master in library science. Mm-hmm. He's working at Dakota Tech, and you were here, and you mentioned a couple of times what you do, but how did you guys end up in St. Paul, Northfield, when he had Medina ties?
Well, when our last year in Los Angeles, our intention was to move back to St. Paul and to settle there because, again, as I said, I love St. Paul. And so he started looking for jobs back in this area. And we looked in Winona. We looked in Northfield. I think he looked at a couple places in St. Paul. Did a phone interview for St. Mary's in Winona. And Carlton actually brought us here. And so he interviewed at Carlton, and we came here together for a weekend so that he could sit and interview at the library there. And he got hired for a temporary position at Carlton, and that's how we ended up in Northfield. And so he worked there for 2 years in the library, and when his time was up, he worked at the Carnegie Library here for a while in their ILL department, and eventually got his amazing job at Dakota County Technical College. And so during that whole entire time, we moved here, and it was really tough. We moved here in 2001, and weeks after we moved here was when 9/11 happened. And so it was really, really rough to leave a big group of friends, everybody behind, and like move to this less than desirable apartment situation that we were in. I did not have a job. And then like sitting in that basement apartment and watching that happen was, I think, just...
Where was the basement apartment?
We were over at the Cannon Valley Apartments. So I don't know if they're still called that. I think they're still
over
called
by
that.
The Northfield.
Yeah, they're by the retirement center. Yeah.
That's
and
what they're
so,
called.
Yeah. And it was just really, really rough.
Aww.
And at the time, yeah, I wasn't working. I could not find work.
Did you have your baby?
Nope. It was just me.
Boring.
It was boring, mm-hmm. But I don't stay bored for long. And I kept looking for work. I kept looking for looking to do web design work, because that's when, by the time we left Los Angeles, I was doing tech work and doing quality assurance work for a kids' educational website. And I had developed a lot of skills. And so I was hoping to continue to do that kind of work after we moved here. But that work was not available in town. And I kept looking outside of town and could also not find it, because I didn't quite have enough skills available to me to make that kind of job work. I looked for admin work and I couldn't get hired because they were like, oh, you'll be too bored, was one of the women who interviewed me. And I'm like, no, I love to answer phones. Seriously, please hire me. So I eventually got a job at a chiropractor in town. And then I got a job at After School Unlimited, which is now called Kid Ventures. And so I did after school childcare for a while. And then I got hired as an instructor at the Northfield Arts Guild. And so I kind of did those two jobs in tandem for a while. And eventually started teaching dance at the Arts Guild. And got a job, a full-time job, down at Marathon Multimedia, which was in Faribault. And I don't know where it's at anymore, even what it's called.
What did they do?
They did data collection at medical conventions. And so I was a project manager down there, basically.
Okay.
And they were in Northfield. They moved down to this really sketchy old Peterbilt building down in Faribault. I worked with a lot of amazing people. It was not an ideal job in a lot of ways. But before that happened, I received a phone call from Tom McCown looking for somebody to choreograph Rock and Roll Revival. And so in 2003, before I got hired full-time at Marathon, I choreographed my first Rock and Roll Revival in that tiny little apartment space. And it was amazing. It was a huge challenge, and it was the first time I'd ever worked with such a large group of kids. And it was great. I loved it. I absolutely fell in love with it. I love Tom McCown so much, and like, I'm so grateful to him for that opportunity. But then I kind of put that aside, and I ended up working full-time in Faribault for a long time while teaching dance and doing, it was kind of a nutty time. Kept doing choreography gigs occasionally. And then eventually we got pregnant. And so I worked in Faribault for that next year. And then we had Sophie. So, and then I went in and I'm like, I'm out of here. And so I went back to choreographing Rock and Roll Revival, which was a much better gig by far.
And the pay was outstanding, I would assume.
Down for Rock and Roll Revival or for down in Faribault?
Rock and Roll Revival.
Oh, yeah. The pay. It's, I think at one point I was like, I think a person who works in a Nike shoe factory makes more money than I do.
Well, yeah, maybe 85 cents an hour.
Yeah, I think I've moved up to $1 an hour.
Okay.
Yeah, because a lot of that work that happens for that show by me is completely unseen. You know,
yeah.
I do hours worth of work before I even see the kids, you know, tons of time in my basement space, like working on choreography and then reviewing it before I go in to teach and refining it each time. And so there's a lot of work that non-contact hours.
do you have to, the way the media is today in regards to how they dance on television, et cetera, do you have to reel it in with the kids that want to be Beyonce and shake your booty, as they say? I mean, do you have to, or do you let them go ahead and put that in?
No, I try to stay really authentic to the time. And I have had many people who grew up in that era who have actually commented and complimented the work as far as being authentic to that kind of late 60s feel, you know.
Right.
And like, I mean, this year we've, since Ray Coudray took over as director, we've included a little bit more contemporary stuff, we put a couple disco numbers in and a couple more current songs in. But I really do try to honor the look and shape of Latin America. You know, I think of American Bandstand, or, you know, as I said earlier, I'm a huge Monkees fan. And so there's always like a little bit of dancing in some of those episodes, or just, you know, watching and being familiar with that kind of TV and that kind of movement. And so I really do try to honor that feel as much as possible, and try to get, I mean, infuse it with a little bit of my own movement as well.
Were you impressed with the fact that one of the Monkees went to Carleton College?
Yeah, I was pretty excited about the Peter Tork game room.
Yeah,
yeah, he's a pretty amazing human. I really like Peter Tork a lot.
what other places did you live in St. Paul?
That's it. That's not true. We lived in our little house on St. Clair, and from there we moved over to this, I hesitate to call it a garbage house, but it was kind of a garbage house on Snelling Avenue. We were like a mile from the state fairgrounds. It was like probably built in the 1880s. It was a beautiful home at one point, divided into like a top and bottom apartment. And so we lived there, but it was really, really cheap. And we were saving up to go to Rome. To go to Rome,
okay,
for a month. And so we were all working full time and saving up to go to Rome.
What do you mean we were all working full
time? We were, my husband, who was not my husband at the time, but Michael and I were living there with my best friend, Andriana.
Okay.
And so she...
The three of you.
Yes, the three of us. Yeah, we were saving up because we were going to go to Rome for a month with our teacher, and be student. We were going to be student teachers, and so we were working like dogs and living in this horrible, horrible apartment.
Well, you could always go down to Hamlin and shower there.
Yeah, right. Oh, the shower in this place was so sketchy.
Is that when the St. Paul Saints played at Midway?
Yeah, they were at Midway at the time, but we were close to like the Ginkgo coffee shop on Snelling, which is still a favorite spot of mine. I love it there. Mm-hmm. And Hamlin was right across the street, and literally right across the street from where we were living. And our house had some notoriety to it. We had a sketchy dirt floor basement that had spray painting and graffiti all over the walls that had been put there by people who had gone to parties there. Because everybody we talked to who went to Ham was like, oh yeah, I've been to a party there. Like, oh yeah, I passed out in that basement. Like, oh my gosh. It was a really colorful, inexpensive place to live for a while.
We're going to take a final break, and then we'll come back and conclude our conversation with a woman named Sherry Setchell. And stick around, will you please?
Hey, what you selling?
Fun.
It looks like a lot of fun.
You know it.
Can I give it a test drive?
Absolutely. Just be careful. It has a lot of power.
Oh, man. Whether you're in the market for a new dirt bike, jet ski, four-wheeler, motorcycle, side-by-side, or pretty much any other fun thing you're looking for, remember Leo's South in Lakeville. We sell fun.
Portable one, the one you want at Leo's South.
We sell fun.
Visit leosouth.com to tempt yourself.
Flexion Care Suites on the campus of Three Links here in Northfield offers comfort care in a home-like environment. We provide compassionate, specialized end-of-life care to residents and families during phases of an incurable illness. We have a wonderful staff that provides the highest quality of care, supporting each resident's personal wishes. I am Susan Samuelson, Clinical Nurse Manager of Reflections. You can call me at 664-8809 for a tour of this beautiful facility.
Hey.
This one I know, yeah.
What's it called?
Make You Jump by Criss Cross. I know it's by Criss Cross. Speaking of senior prom, I remember this song being played at senior prom.
Okay. Crisscross and jump is correct. Yeah. You did pretty good.
Yeah,
you got
not
half
too bad.
Of them.
Yeah.
You didn't know the number one song.
I did not know the Voice to Men song, which I think is a little bit, I'm proud of that. I'm glad I did not know that one.
You know what, you kept mentioning that you're a big fan of the Monkees.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I was going to try to work in, oh, are you a believer? And then it reminded me of the thing that some teenagers, well, they're out of high school probably by now, Justin Bieber, and Are You a Belieber? And I thought, what a great marketing, Are You a Belieber?
Right.
And what side of town are you living on now?
West Side.
On the West Side.
Mm-hmm.
Over on Madison?
On First.
Next to Paul Wellstone's
place. Yeah, we're next
place.
To the Wellstone
okay.
House, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And not far from the confessionals.
From where?
The confessional.
The confessional? You mean St. Dom's?
St. Dominic's?
Yeah.
Obviously, if it's personal, you don't have to respond to it. Was that an important part of your life growing up, was religion?
We went to church every weekend, and it was kind of one of our communities. My mom, who, when you were saying, like, what would you like to talk about? Like, I'd love to talk about my mom, because I'm a fan of my mom big time. And just how amazing she's been in my life. She moved all over for me. She moved to San Diego when we moved to L.A. She moved to Minneapolis when we moved to Northfield, and now lives in Northfield, much to the happiness of many people in Northfield. She really fits into this community beautifully. My mom went to college while I was in grade school and while I was in high school. But one of the things we always managed to try and do, even though sometimes she fell asleep, we went to church. So,
okay.
Yeah. So that was a big part of my growing up, and is not a part of my adult life in that way anymore. But I do still consider myself to be very spiritual in that respect, and kind of taking a buffet of ideas. So, but yeah, no, we grew up in the Baptist church, and we went to a place in South Omaha, and I loved the pastor there. He was just an amazing, amazing man, Pastor Jim. And the Kojals, who were friends of my mom from when she was very young, who often took good care of us and were a place for me to be if I needed to be someplace. So, yeah.
So you're an only child.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And your mom and dad got split up age three.
Yep.
So she doesn't have another.
Right now she's got no partner. So
no partner.
No
so
partner.
you're her life.
We are it. Yeah. We are it. I mean, and as I said, she's a huge part of this community. She's a labor and delivery nurse out at Maple Grove Hospital. And
Maple Grove?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So she
way
commutes. Yeah, she commutes from
oh
here.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yep. It's crazy. So I'm super excited. She's going to retire soon, although I know she won't stop working. She is, as I think I used the word dynamo when I talked about her earlier, and I think that's the best word for her. She just is a self-perpetuating ball of energy. It's pretty amazing.
Is she tall?
No. You haven't seen my mom.
No.
My mom is 4'3".
Oh, my gosh. Goodness.
Yeah, she's
4'3".
Yeah, she used to be 4'6", but age, you know.
Yeah.
But no, she is a tiny woman in body, but a big woman in heart, and just really outstanding.
Well, is she like a registered nurse?
Yep, she's a registered nurse.
Well, aren't they always looking for people at Northfield?
Yep, she's addicted to her night shift. She really likes working the night shift, and so she's kind of getting in her last few months. What is it, 13 months? She has a countdown calendar. She's excited to retire. Mm-hmm. So,
what,
yeah.
Where does she live?
She lives over on Greenvale. So she's
okay.
Not too far from us. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, she's got a sweet little condo that she's renting from somebody over there.
Do you have animals?
I do have an animal. We are definitely animal people. I have a cat. And her name is LaFay. She was named after a soul singer named Sharon Jones. And Sharon passed away in 2016. And Sharon's middle name was LaFay. And so I named LaFay after her.
So
and
it's almost a kitten.
When we adopted her, she was 2 years old. So
okay.
Yeah, we got her from the Humane Society. And after losing, we had a cat. We've had three cats total in our home, and one of them was our 20-year-old cat that we had from college to Los Angeles. I mean, she made every move with us and really, really meant a lot to us. And so when she passed, it was really hard. And we adopted a cat who actually from the Humane Society who was actually blind. She had no eyes, which people are like, what? But like, she was a good reminder of just the resiliency of life. Like, she was the sweetest, most affectionate cat I have ever had and ever met. And just like, it was amazing to watch her learn our home, like the way she just kind of ran around the house very quickly and like felt everything out and learned it. But she unfortunately, she had breast cancer, oddly enough, and she passed away a year and a half ago, and which was really, really hard because we didn't get to have her for very long. But then LaFay came in, and I call her, she's my midlife crisis girlfriend cat. She's like the rebound girlfriend. She's beautiful. She's very snuggly, and she's just, yeah, she's a really
fun. Did your husband like them as well?
Oh, yeah. Chloe, our first cat, was like, she was like best buds with Michael, and so was Wednesday, the middle cat. And he and LaFay are just like, they're getting to be better buddies. She's kind of my girl. Yeah. She's kind of my girl.
I like cats. Yes. And the first one I think that we had out where we live now was pretty much the wife's cat. I mean, you know, it was fine with me and all that, right. But it was hers. And then the next one that lived to 19 years old, nice. Well, that was my cat.
Yes.
To the point where it would kind of, you know, like get away from him. I'm serious.
Wow.
And you can become attached to cats.
Oh,
and
man.
I have manly buddies that, you know, cats for crying out. Yeah. And then dogs, I like dogs, mm-hmm. except I don't want the responsibility.
Yep, exactly. They're,
you know,
exactly.
It used to really, you know, put on gloves and pick up poop.
Yeah, no.
Well, I can see, you know, doing it's not that bad of a deal now.
Right.
But I just don't want to have to walk them. And,
mm-hmm,
you know,
exactly.
And with a cat,
yeah.
I like to say, lift the toilet seat, open up a bag of cat food, come back in 2 weeks, and they're just mad that you haven't been there.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It doesn't matter how long you're gone. They're always mad that you haven't been there.
So what's in the immediate future for you, young lady, here in Northfield, Minnesota, and how old is your child?
She is 13 and a half, and she'll be a freshman this year at Arcadia Charter School.
Okay.
So that's in the immediate future, is trying to get her ready for that, get us ready for it. And I've got, actually this weekend, the Dance Theater Company for the Northfield Arts Guild has a performance at the Riverwalk Market Fair at 11:30 a.m. So we're having our final rehearsal for that today. And the Hotspot House Band will be joining us for that. So we'll have live music, which I'm really, really excited about. And after that, it's going to be a little bit of a break before Rock and Roll Revival kicks into full gear.
All right.
So I'll have my regular classes set up in the fall and a few other small projects, but nothing big till rock and roll. So it'll be a little bit of a vacation and a mind break for a bit. Clean the house, maybe.
Yeah, that's, you're supposed to do that in the spring.
Yes.
What was I had one last question I was going to ask you, and I'm trying to think of it. Oh, well. Do you operate independent of the Northfield Arts Guild and are hired privately by individuals and lease a studio?
No, I am an employee of the Northfield Arts Guild. I'm also an employee of the high school. I am a contractor for Arcadia, so where I work. It's a kind of a different situation depending on where I'm at any given time. So I am technically a coach at the high school.
Can you plug into the PERA? The teacher's retirement fund?
No, that would be great, but no.
Well, tell them you know me.
Yeah, I'll be like, hey.
I want to thank you very much for joining me here today.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right. Our guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair, Sherry Sutchill. You'll probably see her coming up at various productions at the Arts Guild and at the high school. Enjoy her talent. And we are now going to get into some more programming here on 1080 AM radio, KYMN from Northfield, Minnesota, and
95.1, The One, revolutionizes radio with a playlist that lasts for days, not minutes.
Bring us round, so long. So high, I might as well be gone.
Treasure tower, and I promise that I won't lose.